Ness. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily
Talk Around
reflect
Town
the
is supported in part by community.
Start this all over again.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt and Margaret Friedenauer. Our talking topic is shopping locally. Who does it hurt? Our guests are Borough Finance Officer Gila Stewart, business owner Doug Olrud, and local consumer Dick Flagel. We'll check in with the harbor recycling efforts, and Hey, Who Are You? Introduces us to another community member. Stay tuned for Talk Around Town. And a good morning to you, Tom and Margaret. How are you doing?
Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Deborah.
Good. Oh, that was a little intimidating introduction there. What's new?
Well, it's we're winding towards the end of the basketball season, so and that would be kind of the end of winter almost in Haines. Spring, which in Alaska looks a lot like winter, only brighter.
More daylight.
A little bit.
And people are coming back. And, you know, I think the communities are coming back alive to a certain extent. So, yeah.
But it wasn't the big news.
Oh, the big news.
Is there any like new
news? I think he was leading into gold medal tournament is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Again, but
yeah.
End of the basketball season.
Thank you, Margaret, for
gold medal tournament.
Finishing his thought.
Yeah, that's right. Next week, gold medal. That's the biggest thing. No, the biggest thing probably in since we last spoke was kind of Haines being at the center of kind of this national discussion of extreme winter sports and safety and risk and the things that happen here in the mountains. Haines, you know, has become kind of a focal point for these extreme skiers, and we've had just recently this second death locally on a heli school. Third death in a few months in terms of the length of the industry or the season of the industry. So, there's bigger discussions. Other people nationwide are looking at this, and we're kind of right there because we're a place that, you know, has these incredible peaks that these guys can make it down. It's remarkable. It's remarkable film footage. It's remarkable, you know, for any kid that skis, it's kind of like the gold standard. But also tremendous risks there and raises a bevy of questions about whose responsibility is safety, It's, you know, and so we're kind of right at the center of it. It's kind of what's putting us on the map right now.
Mm-hmm. Have you, either of you, read or seen the New York Times article about the film?
Well, there was a New York Times article about the film, but then the day after, there was also a response to that from someone who is a pretty well-known journalist in the outdoor community. Steve Casimiro wrote an article in response to the New York Times one.
Well, what's that say?
Well, Deborah, you didn't hear my story. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding. He was explaining, I thought it was an interesting reply to the New York Times article about how, so-called extreme sport people do take these risks, but they take them, most of them take them very consciously, and trying to explain to people that they do think about the ramifications of what they do and the risks of what they do, and yet they still decide to do them. But it doesn't make them, you know, he was trying to say it doesn't make those who go out and do these adventures nuts or crazy, he said, and he does think that those that partake in them need to express more care and concern about their risks and how they do evaluate them, mm-hmm. because they're not, he was trying to argue that they're not just reckless mm-hmm. individuals with no concept of what they're doing, that most of them, a lot of them are very conscious of the risks they're taking and how that affects family and friends, but that maybe they need to express that more to people who don't take those same kind of adventures mm-hmm. so that people understand that they aren't just crazy loose cannons out there, all of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It was an interesting discussion, but
yeah, and it's interesting. We had a story this week with one of the survivors of the injury, the accident that killed the guide 2 weeks ago, and very interesting distinctions that he draws between these professionals who actually are paid to do this, who can you know negotiate these incredible
falls
and peaks and whatnot, and the guys that come down here from down south who just want to go heli skiing. And, you know, there's a huge range of abilities mm-hmm. there. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's the companies have a lot of work to do to make sure they're putting the right person on the right peak. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot there that I think the public is just starting to get a view of. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think about the ramifications over the long term for our own community. And I think, as a heli-ski operator said at a recent Chamber of Commerce meeting, you know, there's no way that the industry is going to go away. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to be here. It is here, and it's going to stay.
Sure.
And so I think all of us need to, you know, make our peace with it somehow. And if it takes a community to, you know, discuss and come to understandings about what we're dealing with, it's probably better for us in the long run.
Yeah, one of the perspectives I have is that it's still a tour. It's a tour that, just like taking somebody out to see a bear, it's a tour that the borough issues a permit for. And I think that's going to be the borough's perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we call it an industry, but what actually happens there is a tour.
I understand what you're saying.
Gotcha.
Right, we've got tour. Okay. Anything else dominate the news this it's been 2 weeks, maybe three, since we've chatted.
A lot of discussion about the police department on the mm-hmm. assembly level, mm-hmm. Tom. Mm-hmm.
I was in the news. I was in the news last week.
You were in the news.
I was at ground.
That's never
ground
a good thing.
Zero. Oh no, I think it happens a lot. It happens from time to time in a small town. And
yeah.
Our reporter had to interview me last week, and she said, "I've never had this happen." But I said, "You know,
I did too."
If you remember that, yeah, and Margaret interviewed me as well. But if you remember the Janet Cook affair, when a Washington Post reporter basically fabricated a whole story that, you know, won the Pulitzer Prize and that was revoked. And I mean, time and time again, the media have to cover themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only fair. We cover everyone else.
Right.
So, I think one time, I'm not sure if I've ever quoted myself, but.
That would be a little, stretch.
Yeah, I had to report about things that I was involved in, and I think people expect that. I think the public mm-hmm. expects that. But the bigger question is, parent complaints, from within the police department about the chief, They've kind of been discussed only generally at the assembly level for 2 weeks. Middle of this week, now there's going to be an assembly meeting Friday.
Yeah.
On this matter. It seems like things are kind of coming to a head there.
And I need to jump in to just clarify, too, that I'm the host of this show, but I'm also on the assembly.
Right.
I mean, the town is really tiny sometimes.
Sure.
But, you know, just to say that. So I recognize that there are issues. Yes, there will be a meeting on Saturday.
It's not, Friday.
Friday.
5:30.
But that one was just announced last night, which was interesting, because on the assembly meeting Tuesday, it was decided that they would put off the discussion again until March 26 meeting, you know, for various reasons, to get more information, this and that. And then it was announced just last night is when I got the email that there's a special assembly meeting Friday.
Oh, maybe more information has come forward.
Perhaps. Yeah. Guess we'll find out.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
The other, I guess, besides basketball, I don't know.
And the weather. Basketball, the weather, and something.
The budget stuff. People are kind of getting their, you know, their and people that want money from the borough are kind of getting their ducks in the row, and we're kind of heading into that season where the...
Right, and the Assembly has had a drawn-out process, a discussion about the status of nonprofits and whether or not they will be funded this year and the process by which they might be reviewed and evaluated for funding. There's grave concerns because of the the real loss of funding to the borough from the federal government and other sources.
Oh, the sequestration.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
The sequestration, but also, yeah. I mean, the borough manager has made alluded to this several times, and I had a longer discussion with him this week for a story about how he's worried. He really wants people to be prepared for what the budget is going to look like this year, and it's not going to look pretty compared to previous years because of that. Loss of federal, a little state funding, and then the sequestration. Who knows how long that'll have effect on the federal and state monies too. So it's going to be an interesting budget cycle when it comes out.
Right. Okay. No pencils. Right. We won't be buying pencils and paper. It's just be, you know,
sticks and mud. What are you saying? Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, all governments, no matter what level, is basically personnel, and it's 70% of your budget's personnel.
Yeah.
And if you want to save your personnel and give them whatever, you know, rather than take away from the personnel, you have to take away the pencils or the fuel or the materials or the whatever.
Or you have to take away the personnel.
Or you have to take away the personnel. I don't know that that's being suggested at this time, but definitely there are going to be challenges.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent it's healthy in so much as when the budget declines, it forces us all to examine what's important, what we want to pay for. Mm-hmm. You know, what we can live with and what we can live without. And it's kind of a crucible where those issues are determined. And sometimes I think without a budget crunch, you would just...
Well, that's exactly what the Republicans wanted us to all think about.
Well,
I mean, that's what the whole
I agree with the Republicans on that. There is no endless source of money.
All right, because I have the clicker. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks,
and
Deb.
We'll check in with you in 2 weeks. Small Boat Harbor represents the largest cost center for the Haynesboro in terms of trash generated and hauled away. Harbor Master Phil Benner wants to change that, and he's initiated a recycling program at the harbor. And we're checking in with Phil Benner today. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Deborah.
Oh, put that headphone on your head.
Yeah.
So, Phil, tell me in your own words why you are developing a recycling program at the harbor.
It is exactly what you said. Last year, we spent over $35,000 just on trash at the downtown Boat Harbor. So we're trying to cut down on what we are sending to the dump.
Okay.
And so we're going to try to separate the waste streams as much as possible. And also it's a part of the, as you know, the assembly signed a agreement to hopefully make Haines the first clean harbor in Southeast Alaska, and it's part of that initiative also.
So what are you targeting? Like, what are you not wanting to haul away?
Well, the big thing is, as you know, it's probably the same way for anybody, the stores and all big dumpster users. Cardboard, people that break down boxes, we can send that to recycling. That's a big thing over last year. This year we have developed a cardboard recycling station. Plastics, glass, and then also for the small boat harbor, we have, of course, oil.
Mm-hmm.
We will be recycling antifreeze.
Mm-hmm.
This is the big buckets of oil that you get your clean oil in at the big, mm-hmm. and we can get rid of those.
Now, I must ask this question. Are we talking about only for harbor users, or do you handle oil for other people outside of that?
No, this is harbor users.
Okay, and how many people in the community then are represented by the harbor users, I guess?
Well,
and it's the trash that's developed off of the harbor usage. It's not like they get to bring it from home.
That's correct.
Okay.
I would hope not.
Just want to clarify.
Yeah. Well,
so, I mean, I think that's one of the issues, perhaps, you know, that the borough does support several trash collection centers, and we do have to ensure that it's for those that are paying for that service.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to avoid with the amount the bill's coming to. The mortgage that we get from the harbor almost doesn't cover the bill that we pay for just trash. So
mm-hmm.
we have to, but we also, the users of the ramp, when you go out and you bring your boat back in, you can certainly dump your trash that you generated on the water
mm-hmm.
into it. So
mm-hmm.
it's about 500 people in the community that
okay.
use the small boat harbor, Litnikoff Cove or mm-hmm. Lutac even. So,
okay. So is this, where is the recycling operation located in the harbor?
It is right by the harbor master's office, right by on the street there, and it is growing as we speak. We have, like I said, we just put together the cardboard recycling area. We're also taking in all the hazardous waste so we can get rid of it effectively. Mm-hmm. We don't want any of that stuff ending up in the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing zinc recycling. So when you stick your boat on the grid and you're changing out your zincs, your corrosion protection, there's trash cans right there that sink that stay on the ground, and they can put their zincs right in those trash cans. Mm-hmm. And there is companies that want that zinc and will mm-hmm. pay for that zinc.
Okay. So do you have a goal, a financial goal? Like, you already know that it's $35,000 last year. What do you think you really can get the cost down to?
I like to cut it by a third, about to $20,000. I think that's a realistic goal, especially in the first year.
Uh-huh.
I believe that, you know, people want to do what's right. I think our fishermen and our communities and the boat users in the community want to do what's right. And it'll take a little while to get educated and do that. But
mm-hmm.
I think we can achieve that goal. And then hopefully from there, it will spread.
Now, is it possible to, I guess I'm thinking in terms of if it's growing as we speak, is it going to grow into the street? Will it be possible to relocate this a recycling center to the floats or something?
They do not want – we're having to move our trash containers anyway because the mm-hmm. ADEC doesn't like trash containers over the water.
Oh.
So we will not be putting them on the floats, but we will – as the harbor expands, as you know, as part of the assembly,
mm-hmm.
we have money to expand the harbor. There will be a designated area that will the recycling center eventually grow to. Okay. By the harbor master's
office.
All right.
Well, thanks very much, Phil. It's great to see that you're jazzed about not only the cutting down the expenses, but also attacking the waste stream in a more contemporary way. Did you bring something for us to take a look at?
No, I was just reference
okay.
material.
There is a question from a caller. Who is a harbor user? Does it include people who have ramp permittees, event permittees are harbor users?
Correct.
Okay. So anybody that has a permit or a stall or whatever as a harbor user?
Correct. Is if they generate the waste while they're out on the water and they come back, they can certainly put that waste into the harbor.
All right. Great. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you.
Yep. It's after 10 o'clock and you are tuned in to Talk Around Town on KHNS. I'm Deborah Schnabel. The Chamber of Commerce and the Chilkat Valley News have both launched their own Shop at Home campaigns. And today we're going to explore a bit more the real impacts of shopping at home, the impacts on the borough government, on as you as a taxpayer and as a consumer, and the community generally. Gila Stewart, the borough finance officer, is with us. Welcome, Gila. And Doug Olrud, co-owner of several local retail enterprises, and Dick Flagel, our retired banker, and I think of you as a conscious consumer, Dick, and you're going to fill out our panel. So welcome to all of you. You're supposed to say...
Good morning.
Thank you. Okay, we've got to liven this up here. So let's just start by talking about sales tax in general, because it is only one way of raising money for public purposes. An additional percentage is added to every sale, unless exempted, and that money is handed to the government. It can be called sometimes a consumer tax, a consumption tax, an excise tax, a sin tax, a bed tax. The point is that it's linked to consumption. And in the United States, sales tax is generally reserved for municipalities. Neither the federal government nor states collect sales tax. Now, Canada collects a sales tax, and a lot of European countries fund up to 50% of their federal government expenditures with sales tax revenue. It's just remarkable. Denmark does that for one. In Haines, we collect 4% area-wide and an additional 1.5% on sales in the Townsite Service District. I know we charge a bed tax. I'm not sure what that is, Gila.
4%.
4% on top of the sales tax. Now, we're having this discussion today because when people do not consume at home, we can't tax the sale, and then government revenues go down. So, Gila, I want to just start with you, if you can just give us a brief thing. You've provided us a great amount of information, and if you could just share it with us. How much do we collect, and what has been the historical, like, you know, last 4 or 5 years, the historical total collected on sales tax in Haines?
Thank you, Deborah. Well, we collect roughly 20% of the borough's general fund operating revenue comes from sales tax. That is, like you said, the 5.5% that's collected in the town site, the 4% that's collected outside of the town site, and the 4% bed tax. And the figures that I gave you, about $2.7 million collected in 2012. That actually doesn't include the bed tax, which is another approximately $75,000.
One of the things that I noted is that the amount collected from 2009 to 2012 has increased, and I'm going to say only, by $120,000, and I think that's pretty significant. That in 2009 we were collecting like $2.6 million a year, and now we're at 2.7 something. And so, I don't know, to me that kind of signals that if prices are rising but our sales tax is not being, you know, collected, you know, proportionately, then perhaps the sales are really going down in town. Would you draw that conclusion or not?
It's hard to draw that conclusion from the gross numbers because the sales tax on the sale of fuel is a large component of the sales tax we collect. And as you know, and everyone knows who buys fuel, the prices fluctuate. So it's a significant component. So it's hard to draw conclusions about what's happening on Main Street, you know, in the other businesses based on these gross numbers. But I would agree with you that you could contemplate that there may be fewer people shopping in Haines based on these numbers.
Mm-hmm. Doug, you are a business owner that's been growing a business during this time of 2009 to 2012. And I invited you because you deal with a full gamut. Well, not full. You don't sell fuel. But I don't think. But groceries and supplies, hunting supplies, and clothing, all of these, the full range of commodities that people buy generally. So, how would you do? You have a sense of how sales are going up or down locally in the community?
I think it depends on which type of business you're in. Mm-hmm. You know, we sell stuff to several of the restaurants, and you can see the restaurant business is down locally, it seems like. Mm-hmm. That I think you look at this last winter at the number of them that had very shortened hours or were closed during the wintertime. Being able to go out on a weekend evening and try and get something to eat was pretty difficult.
Impossible.
Impossible. And so I think there's definite sectors of the retail environment that are having a hard time right now.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, it seems to me that you have your particular story, to have a large inventory.
Yes.
Like you walk into it and you think, wow, there's a lot of people in Haines. Now, do you, you don't have to tell me this, but I start thinking, it must be really difficult to figure out how much to stock in a town like Haines. Do you overstock so that people have more choices to entice them to shop in Haines, and does that backfire or what?
Yes to all of that.
Okay.
You know, when we look at what we're going to put in the store, we want Haines to have a broad selection of things to shop from. And a lot of times when we get into certain programs to get the best pricing, sometimes I have to order more than I probably would be comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But by taking that extra risk myself, we're able to get better deals on the product, offer better pricing to Haines. And one of the things we've noticed since going back to when my parents first started the store is a good portion of our sales are to people out of the Yukon. And having that extra inventory on hand, especially when you're in the clothing section with the different sizes, has paid really good dividends to people traveling from out of town.
Well, now, does that give you a different perspective on shopping locally? Because if one of your biggest, clients is not a local person, then does that negate in any way the argument to shop locally?
Well, the way that I look at shopping locally is I try and spend as many of my own dollars here in town as I can. And I don't think that anybody should be required in any way to shop locally. I think part of it's incumbent on us as business owners to provide a good enough selection of goods, good enough pricing, and good enough quality of service that people want to shop locally. And so there's an aspect of that us as business owners need to do a better job of appealing to our local local consumers.
Mm-hmm.
The part that frustrates me is the people that'll come into the store and, I just ordered that online the other day. And, after I figure in the shipping, it would have been cheaper for me to get it here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that they don't even look before they buy it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, trying to support our own local community, at least giving local merchants an option and giving them the opportunity to serve you before you go and look outside.
Mm-hmm.
But it does come back on us to have the type of inventory that people are looking for and the pricing and the service that make them want to shop locally.
Mm-hmm. Dick, you've been shaking your head as you've been listening to Doug. And as a consumer, what are some of the issues, I think, that you see as a consumer, in terms of, let's say, what does the markets, there's an internet market, there's the White Horse market, there's the Juno market. I mean, people can go anywhere to buy whatever they want to do. When you're choosing to buy something, I'm assuming that you do as Doug suggested, you look first locally. Okay, but what are the things that the local merchants don't seem to satisfy the consumer? In what areas, I think, can you
probably identify? The depth of stuff available.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, like I can have empathy with Doug trying to figure out what sizes to have in clothing. I mean, you know, and what styles, and who's his market. Mm-hmm. Who's he appealing to when he buys, you know, an orange jacket or a purple jacket, you know? Mm-hmm. Who is he thinking of somebody that he's going to sell that to? It's kind of interesting. I think that the box stores, we've sort of designed our world, and we've said what value is, and value is cheap. But we also want quality, and we also want expertise. So, I mean, getting gas in Haines Junction, I said, well, you guys are going to miss Madeley's. And they said, yeah, it was kind of tough for about a month, but we're getting used to it. And I said, well, what happened to them? Well, there's some personal things that were going on, but basically Walmart got Madeley's. Because
in
White Horse, that's a long ways away.
It's a long ways away.
They said, you know, when you go to Madeley's and you pay $6 a gallon for milk, and you can go to Walmart and get it for $3, bring a bunch home, throw it in the freezer or whatever they do. I mean, that's
snowbank.
Well, so that's what the local people are kind of fighting. You know, they're fighting the price because, you know, in this economy, people want to stretch their money as far as it'll go. And as far as fresh stuff and produce or whatever, mm-hmm. pretty much this is, you're going to buy it here.
Mm-hmm.
As far as some other things, and Doug probably sees this as he examines what he sells and what he sells less of. I mean, maybe some paper products or whatever, maybe that goes to Juno or White Horse or whatever, where you buy a case of this or a case of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting when I talked to Larry Paulson when he ran King's Store, and he said, you know, it's interesting. I had somebody knock on my door on a Sunday, and I'm normally closed, and they asked if they could look at a camera, and I think it was a Pentax camera. And I said, okay, I'll go downstairs and open it up, and you can look at it. And he went downstairs on the Sunday, and the person spent 10 or 15 minutes looking at this camera, looking through the viewfinder, looking at the mountains, and said, well, I'm going to think about this. A couple of weeks later, he saw that person and said, you know, did you give any more thought to that camera? Oh, yeah, I bought one. You bought one? Where did you buy it? Well, I bought it in Juneau. I saved $10 or $20 bucks or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the person wanted Larry's expertise, but then they went El Cheap, and they didn't mm-hmm. spend the money to pay him back for the time that he gave them to tell him mm-hmm. about the product.
You know, and that's one of the things, too, I think that the Internet has introduced to people's lives now, is that you just kind of you don't think of having a personal relationship with the person that is providing the product to you. And that degree of separation, I think, allows people to be more picky or satisfy more variables, I suppose. You know, when we're talking right now about colors, you know, whether or not is it more important that I have the exact shade of, you know, jacket that I would prefer, or have one that's a little bit off. And in a way, I was thinking about this earlier this morning, and I thought, I think in a part it's a function of how old you are. I mean, the older I get, the less I care about what the color of my jacket is, you know. And also, I recognize, too, that growing up in Haines, that I have a different perspective on buying things, because I never did grow up with the idea that I could go have anything I wanted anyway. I mean, you went to the store and you bought what they had. And that's all you did, unless you wanted to wait 6 weeks, 8 weeks for, you know, things out of the Sears catalog. Did you want to comment on that?
I was just thinking maybe, you know, there's the Made in Alaska stamp. Maybe there should be a purchased in Hanes patch or something. So you could say, you know, true, this is a disgusting color puce coat, but it was purchased in Hanes and therefore is a little bit cooler than your purple coat.
Uh-huh. That might be a cool thing. I know the Chamber of Commerce did a last year the really cool, I thought it was anyway, Shop at Home campaign.
That's been on their agenda for years and years.
Yeah, but this winter I didn't do it, but I thought about hiring a checker at the post office just to identify the number of Amazon.com boxes that were being hauled out of the post office this at Christmas time. It was alarming to me to think that there's that much shopping going on over the internet, and some of the reasons are they didn't have the right color, or I guess that's mostly the thing, the variables. Everybody has, our culture tells people they can have exactly what they want. And we provide a way for them to find it, usually. And the local merchants have, I think, do a really great job. I personally think we've got great stores in town.
We vote with our dollars, and we have to decide, do we want a bookstore? Do we want grocery stores? Do we want restaurants? And if you don't spend your money locally, then it makes it tougher for those businesses to be there when you want them. I know, as far as the local bookstore, I like the fact that there's a bookstore here. Mm-hmm. They can't have the depth of things available that you can find on the internet. And if they don't have it, they can get it for you. But typically the wait time is out there longer than if you went on the internet and you can have it in, a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And so the local businesses are competing with that. And that's kind of tough.
You know, I want to share another experience too. It's almost the opposite though. The other day, as part of my business, I wanted to have uniform trash receptacles at the in the offices in the building that I manage. So I wanted, because I want to introduce a recycling program. So I ordered, and I went to Amazon. Well, I didn't go to Amazon.com. What happened is I went to that Uline catalog, that we all get, and I found the trash can, or did I? And then I went online. It was interesting. I got directed to Amazon.com, and then I got all of these. I start getting email messages about your package has shipped. And darn it, if they didn't really collect all of those trash cans from about 10 different places and send me, they consolidated in my mind, the shipment was consolidated, but in reality, it showed up at the Hanes post office in at least 10 different boxes. And I was horrified, to think that, there's always these compromises that you make when you shop, where I contributed that much cardboard, I think, to the recycling stream. It was just amazing to see how
there
that
are
happened.
There are companies out there that really don't have an inventory,
right. But
they look like they have a huge inventory. And what they do when you order is they pull from someplace else.
Right, and that's what they did with
and
the
trash cans. That's exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So it's interesting, I think, that we all in some ways have to get kind of savvy to those kinds of things that can happen to you on the, when you don't shop locally, and I don't know. So are there, I can appreciate, Doug, when you're saying that you try to produce or fill your store with all the options at the best price. Are there other things that you do in the store to encourage shopping at home?
Well,
keeping your margins really small or
having
sale days or something.
We have several sales throughout the year. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time on is we're a member of a buying group out of Seattle that allows us to buy direct from manufacturers instead of going through a distributor. And that's something that's allowed us to keep our prices much lower than they would be otherwise. And I would say
probably... Is that like co-op buying or something?
It is co-op buying. That it's all built through a central location. They negotiate our programs. And so we've got, I think it's about 275 stores throughout the country and a couple billion dollars in retail sales. And so having that buying power compared to just me by myself going out and negotiating deals has allowed us to have much better prices than we would be allowed to otherwise. And I probably spend about 30% of my time trying to find the best programs on stuff. You know, pricing and programs is takes up a considerable amount of my time just because I want to make sure that we're trying to offer a really good value. I spend a lot of time online shopping to find out the stuff in the store. What can somebody get this on at Amazon? What can they go to Cabela's or Bass Pro and get these same items? And then try and, okay, can I get anywhere close to that? What's the shipping going to be? And to find out if an item's going to be viable for us to carry it in the store or not. Because one of the hardest things, you know, with Amazon and Cabela's is electronics. You know, a lot of people want us to have the depth finders for the boats and stuff, but they, you know, it's like every 6 months to a year they're changing over to new models, and there's like a 5% margin on them when you look at what you can get them from Cabela's and stuff for. And it's there's a need here locally, but I don't know if anybody can. I still don't have any at the store just because I don't know if a person can make any money on them.
Do you see the nature of the retail trade in Hanes changing over time? I know that we've recognized it in books, for example, that that's, you know, you see more and more Kindles and fewer and fewer books out there. You can kind of see that that's, I mean, that's probably one of the most evident. But do you think there's going to be a difference in the retail trade here in this community over the year?
It's going to keep changing. I think the biggest thing that's keeping more dollars here locally right now is just some of the expensive shipping things here. There's a lot of your heavier, bulkier items that you can't get the free shipping on, that it's really expensive to just get one item here, whereas local merchants are able to put it in, you know, put it on the barge, get a better rate coming up here. But I see a lot more things that people are buying online instead of shopping locally. And so again, that goes back to, you know, it's going to change. Retail's an environment that's been changing ever since they first started selling stuff and bartering and trading. You know, you used to have just a small little store in town that one would be a blacksmith, one would be a few groceries, one would be a hardware. Now you get these big box stores everywhere. And so that it keeps evolving. And I think as the internet commerce evolves, it's going to have a further impact on brick and mortar stores such as ourselves. And so it's one of those, you know, we're always looking at ways that we can get around that. How can we provide something to our customers that they can't get by buying that online?
Gila, does the local government have a program for shopping at home? Like, do you require Phil Benner to buy all of his plastic bags at home?
No, we don't. I think the only formal shop at home plan that's written into our policies is the 3% rule for competitive bids, whereby if a bid for a business that's located in Hanes is 3% higher than the lowest bid or 3% or less, then we can go with the local, the local bid.
But not, is everything procured through a bid process? Like, let's say you go buy paper for the copy machine.
No, it's not,
Okay. So when you just go out and make, I don't know, probably you don't do incidental purchases. You probably do bulk purchases of like so many pencils and pens and paper and cups and stuff like that. Do you just go to the market and buy it like everybody else?
Yeah, for purchases under $1,000, open market purchases, we generally try and get the best price. But if, you know, if the harbor master's out of pens, he'll, you know, run to King's or one of the local stores and buy pens. And and certainly many borough employees run to the local hardware stores every day because we get several invoices every day. But when we do a larger purchase, $1,000 or more, we'll generally get three quotes and go with the lowest price.
It's interesting to me. Earlier, Doug, you had said, I don't think there should be, you know, rules for people having to purchase locally. But sometimes I think, like, when as an assembly member, I know I sometimes think about, you know, the need to figure out our revenues. And it would seem to me that on some level, you know, our own government, you know, needs to recognize that people's salaries are paid, you know, out of revenues generated locally. And so to encourage that kind of a commitment. But it also, I think, invites, it interferes with free market trade, I guess. But sometimes when this, a community this size, concerning yourselves about free market trade sometimes seems, I don't know, maybe trying to split hairs, you know? And I think that that's one of the things that the Chilkat Valley News campaign was trying to bring out recently when he talked, or they illustrated, you know, the amount of money that local providers, or like retail outlets, put back into the community through donations and contributions to other things. So it's an interesting economy, you know, that's playing out all the time. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I really enjoyed reading Tom's editorial on that and seeing Tom and Liz's ad in that same paper talking about the number of organizations that they support. And I think pretty much every retail business in Haines could have a list.
Absolutely.
As long, if not longer. Right. And I know talking to Tom and Liz, their list was actually longer than that. But a lot of them you just don't write down because it's somebody with a fundraiser or something
right.
like that. And,
right.
you know, as a business owner, we feel that's part of our obligation right. to give back to the community.
Yeah.
But it does get frustrating when the first time that you see somebody is when they're coming in and asking for a handout, that, you know, somebody that doesn't really shop at your store and then comes mm-hmm. in and wants mm-hmm. you to give them something
right.
for free, that kind of gets under your skin for a while.
Hauser's IGA also, I just, you know, wanted to comment on that.
Yeah.
They have the bulletin board there on the front that absolutely demonstrates, you know, the amount of goodwill, you know, that Mike and his growing empire,
yep.
and, you know, Blake's store now across the street. Goodness, we've got a lot of entrepreneurs out there with new, you know, retail outlets in town. And so that whole issue, I think, of encouraging, in a lot of ways, why I chose to do this program and look at this topic was because I want people to make that connection that's not particularly evident when you're just thinking about saving yourself money. When you're thinking of saving yourself money, as Dick said, it's often easier and time, you know, to just click online and it'll show up in your mailbox, providing we have a post office, you know, in a couple of days. But the community depends on the commerce that goes through.
I think maybe, you know, what a person could do as a consumer is to have a little talk with themselves and say, do I value having this business in this community? Mm-hmm. And can I satisfy what I need by buying it at that business? And if the answer is yes, then you go, you do that. You support that business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't do it 100% of the time. Maybe you do it 60% of the time, or there's some mix. But I try to support the local businesses. I do spend money in Whitehorse or in Juneau,
mm-hmm.
Probably as most people who live here do.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's probably just going to be there. That's mm-hmm. just going to – I don't think you're going to change that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you also need to understand that when you spend money out of town, you're taking money away from our town that doesn't bounce around and help pay salaries for, you know, like the Third Avenue Road.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had to rip up the concrete or the asphalt so you can grade it because it doesn't seem to be getting fixed. And, you know, I thought, I'm going to go take my four-wheel drive, park it in one of those big, deep rut things, take a picture, send it to Tom and say, I got stuck in my four-wheel drive on Third Avenue. And then as you drive, you're halfway down Third Avenue between the Mountain Market and Heisler's, and you look to your left and you see a nice library, really classy. And then you drive a little farther and you see Haynesboro offices. And, you can get stuck out in the front.
Okay, the guy's on a roll. Go out and buy locally so that
fix the roads.
So, Gila, what options? Let's just say that the revenue from sales tax drops. As it right now is at 2.7 for the 2012, 2.7 million, which is is only less than 2011 by $10,000, but if the price of fuel goes down, I'm assuming that our sales tax revenue will decrease, and it will be something that really does have to be looked at. I mean, we've held sort of kind of steady for the last 5 years. But if sales tax goes down, I mean, an obvious response would be increase the sales tax. But, again, that might just, you know, add to the argument of, well, then I'm not going to shop at home because it makes the prices higher. So what are some of the alternatives that the government would look at to take care of that shortfall, I guess I'd call it?
Well, I guess I might look to elected officials.
I'm a program host right now, Sheila. I'm a program host, okay? I just want to list the options.
As I said earlier, about 20% of the operating revenue for the general fund, and the general fund funds most of the primary services that that people use every day, the roads, the police, the administration, the library, the museum, the swimming pool, the Chilkat Center. And the school, the largest expense by far for the Haynesboro government. And about 20% of that revenue comes from sales tax, about 30% from property tax, about 40% from state and federal government, and about another 10% from user fees, penalties, interest, investment income. So it would have to come from either cutting expenses or raising one of those other sources. And as the manager and elected officials have been talking about for at least a year now, revenues from the federal government and state government are in jeopardy right now. They'll definitely decline. The question is by how much. So if we're facing declining sales tax revenue, it's only a component of other declining revenues. So the answers would have to be increase property tax, increase user fees, or decrease expenses.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that sobering note, we're going to
why don't we just print some money?
I think that's been done. I think that's been done before. I want to thank all of my guests for being with me today, and we're going to close the show out. If there's any other comments other than shop locally, it doesn't hurt. is there anything anyone else would like to add?
Thanks for having us on,
Dave. All right, you bet. Thank you very much for all the work that you do for the community, and shop at home. Time is 10:54, and you're listening to KHNS. Hey, who are you?
Scott Duffy.
Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
Doing good.
Good. So, I invited you. I was so happy that you wanted to come on. What makes you stand out in town?
Maybe my truck.
Really? And remind me of your truck.
Well, you can hear it coming from a long ways away, and oh. It looks like it needs serious help. But I like duct tape a lot, so.
Oh, you have a truck that's duct taped?
Yeah.
All right. What color is it?
Supposed to be blue.
All right. But it's duct taped,
it's
right?
It's going to rust.
All right. So what brought you to Haynes, Scott? And how long have you been here?
Been here, what, going on 16 years, and I was living in Juneau and just wanted to head north and ended up here and never made it further.
Were you planning on going to the interior?
Yeah, I was planning on going to Fairbanks.
Did you run out of gas? What?
No, got a job with INSRA and then just went to Chilkat Lake. Mm-hmm. Worked there for a few years and just got hooked on the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
And so you, I think, have a place at Chilkat Lake. Are you still building on that?
Yeah, well, it's a continuous project. Mm-hmm. But, started it 15 years ago and finished it in 2 years. So, yeah, just got a little cabin out there.
But I do see a lot of you around town a whole lot more than I used to. You used to be out at the lake a whole lot more.
Yeah.
What keeps you here?
Well, I got a job at the Quick Shop, and I'm mm-hmm. a bike mechanic there during the summer. But just needed to get out and start socializing more because, I lived at the lake for years, and it was just time.
Oh, wow. So you're like a little hermit and something?
Yeah, 3 years straight. I lived there nonstop and then just...
That's good that you lived there nonstop, Scott. You made it through. Good.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Talk to me about that. 3 years.
Well, it's just really nice. You just trapping fish and got running water out there. Just the whole... family's getting older and needed to be more in touch with, mm-hmm. My family, nieces and nephews and that type of stuff.
Right, but you lived alone at the lake. You didn't
Yeah,
have...
without okay. power mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And power is good. Mm-hmm. I finally got it this year after 17 years.
Uh-huh. So you're not living at Chilkat Lake anymore. You're living elsewhere.
Yeah.
But still in the community. That's interesting. May I ask, how old are you? I normally don't ask people that question.
46.
Because I wanted to know at what point someone decides that, you know, that kind of a life, you know, in other words, you wanted to get connected. You wanted to stay connected and couldn't stay connected there. That's interesting because I know a lot of people do have cell phones now at Chilkat Lake and all that, but that wasn't
Well, the one thing is when you're living a subsistence lifestyle, it's really good. You just... can't earn a whole lot of extra money, and traveling is something I really want to do, and so a steady job kind of helps with that.
Oh, I get it. Okay, so you have aspirations to be traveling somewhere else?
Yeah, well,
where do you
and just
go?
Be able to go back and see the family when you can, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Hawaii, I went there last year, and first time in I've been here 20 years in Alaska, and it was the first time to see something like that. And
you
that
mean
was
an
nice.
Island in the Pacific?
Yeah, well, being in the ocean, swimming,
wow.
scuba diving,
oh, wow.
surfing, yeah.
Cool, that is so fun.
That was
where
good.
Where else you want to go?
All over. I have a friend that says Cambodia is good, but one thing is this place has the perfect temperature because some of that gets really hot.
Cool. And you know our time is up already,
All
Scott.
Right.
Can you imagine that? Well, I'm so glad to have you on the show, and I hope you enjoyed it. So,
know,
hey, who are you? Scott Duffy. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks, Deborah.
You bet.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haynes with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests, Tom Morfitt, Margaret Friedenauer, Phil Bennard, Dick Flagel, Gila Stewart, Doug Ulrud, and Scott Duffy. Boy, it takes a lot of people to make a community, doesn't it? Next edition of Talk Around Town will be right here on this station, KHNS. That's March 28th. Stay tuned. This is Station KHNS, 102.3 FM, Haines, Alaska.
Special advice.